Revenue is open. Good morning, everyone.
It's screwed up.
Let me just start off by announcing that Senate Bill 663 has some technical work still needed, and so we will carry this over until Monday. We will get to Senate Bill 434 public hearing, but first we need to take a short order of business and go into a work session on Senate Bill 434 for purposes of passing it on to the Ways and Means Committee. This is Senator Olson's bill. He couldn't be with us today, still recovering.
And doing fine.
We're happy to report. So I'm going to do a quick summary, Kyle.
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good morning. Senate Bill 434, the committee will remember, this is the measure will expand an existing property tax exemption for veterans, disabled veterans and their surviving spouses. So what 434 will do, and this is what we do have the A2 amendment in there, in all this as well, it would expand the exemption for veterans with service-connected disabilities of 100% or more. The exemption amount right now for veterans with service-connected disabilities of 40% is about $23,500 of the assessed value is exempted. The change in the bill would make that $60,000 for those veterans with the 100% or more or their surviving spouses. We do have the paperwork is in OLIS. You can see the revenue impact. It's about $3 million a year, $6 million over the biennium, and it grows as the exemption is indexed to inflation or indexed to it grows by 3%. So, and that's both for the existing exemptions are grow by 3%. So, this 60,000 assessed value exemption would start at 60,000 and grow by 3% each year, and that is in line with the growth of maximum assessed value that's allowed. So, it kind of keeps the exemption amount growing along with the assessed value.
Okay.
And so the A2 is the technical, is the surviving spouse piece, and then the plan is to move it to Ways and Means, correct?
Yeah, the A2 did have the change in the, originally the bill was written as 100% disability, and it was including the 100% or more as well, because mm-hmm. You can't have a greater than 100% disability.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, and so the fiscal and the revenue impact are on the amendments?
Yeah, for the A2.
All right.
Mr. Chair, move the dash 2 amendment into 434 dated 5/4/15.
Senator Boquist moves the dash 2s into Senate Bill 434. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, it's ordered.
So, Mr. Chair, I move SB 434 as amended by the dash 2s out with a do pass with a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Senator Boquist moves Senate Bill 434 out with a do pass. With the referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objections? Seeing none. Senate Bill 434 moves to the Ways and Means Committee. I would like to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 967. Kyle, this is yours as well?
Yes. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 967, what the measure will do is it'll expand, it adds language expanding an existing property tax exemption. The exemption under ORS 307130, so this is the exemption for a qualifying property owned or being purchased by an art museum, volunteer, fire department, or incorporated literary, benevolent, charitable, or scientific institutions. And the committee heard a little bit about the 307130 exemption in yesterday's discussion, not related to this bill, but just in general on how there is I think it's fair to say there's a bit of ambiguity in the statute, what exactly, how nonprofits qualify for exemption. In a lot of cases, it depends on the use. It's not just necessarily being a nonprofit automatically qualifies the nonprofit property for exemption, but it does depend on the use of the property. So what Senate Bill 967 does is it expands the existing property tax exemption to include real and personal property owned or leased by a history museum or a science museum if the property is used to fulfill the mission of the museum and is occupied or used for one or more of the specific qualifying purposes. So the qualifying purposes are included in the measure. They relate to food service facility or concession, retail store, parking lot, theater located in a museum, unimproved land that is not specially assessed, and displays, storage areas, and educational classroom or meeting areas. It also defines History Museum and Science Museum as a nonprofit corporation that is organized to display historical or scientific exhibits or both to the public. And it specifies that the exemption does not apply to property property used or occupied as a hotel, water park, chapel, or for any commercial enterprise. And it applies to property tax years beginning on or after July 1st, 2015. And just as a little background on it, in many cases, the museums, the language is related to museums, many or most museums in Oregon are going to be receiving a full or partial property tax exemption already under the existing 307-130 language. So this language adds kind of additional language to the statute to make some clarifications. And I think we'll have some testimony on at least one property that has kind of run into some issues on how it's qualifying, whether it's fully exempt, partially exempt, and so forth. We do have got the fiscal impact. It is minimal, and at this time we don't have the revenue impact yet, so we're unable to move the bill today.
Senator Boquist, this is
your... So, Kyle, just to make sure, it's prospective only into the future, correct?
Yeah, it begins with property tax years July 1st, 2015, so this upcoming tax year.
Okay, and then just for the record, Mr. Chair, because we're moving fast and many of us are spending more time on tobacco than anything else, I know that there's input from Yamhill County and other people, and we need to make sure, as we said, public hearing, so that we can get all the input and everybody's where everybody's at to see where the common ground is, where we go. I think we've, Mr. Chair, had all kinds of testimony the last week on how less desirable the whole nonprofit statute is and how it needs to be cleaned up. And I, of course, been trying to volunteer Senator Birdsugar over there to head up a work group to clean up the whole nonprofit property tax thing, which he hasn't accepted yet. But so it's we need to get it more input and kind of go along and get everybody's stuff so that we can catch up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let's start with Kevin Mannix and Larry Wood.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Kevin Mannix. I'm a Salem attorney, and I represent Evergreen Aviation and Space Museum. I have with me Larry Wood, the executive director of the museum, in case there are any questions for Mr. Wood. I have presented to you a letter in both in paper form as well as it's been uploaded and also sent, I hope, by email to you in regard to our testimony as to this bill. This bill is a refinement of legislation which has been churning since the last session. And I think that legislative revenue staff has explained pretty nicely what the bill is about. I'd like to fill in a couple of important pieces of information that the committee needs to realize. Historically, we've had a loosey-goosey statute in regard to how nonprofit organizations can apply for exemption from property taxes. Loosey-goosey in the sense that some of the language is not precise, and over time I think there's going to need to be a reform of the overall statute that is not going to be accomplished overnight. In the meantime, we've had the experience of looking at the application of the statute to history and science museums. And I will say categorically that in 35 out of 36 counties so far, the museums have normally been able to work with the counties and the assessors and get an exemption based on their mission, based on what they are doing. In Yamhill County, Evergreen Aviation and Space Museum, under the prior assessor, no problem. New assessor comes in, same statute, and reevaluates, and all of a sudden we're now into, I think, our fourth year of litigation about the application of property taxes to the Evergreen Aviation and Space Museum. Now, this bill is not just about this museum, but the museum is sort of the canary in the mine about what can happen if we don't clarify the statute, because if this continues to happen in Yamhill County, other assessors and other counties will begin to say, well, maybe we should be doing something about this. The bill does not change the current language so that those who have been able to have exemptions and carry forward with them under the current language, they're in good shape. But it clarifies the language for the future, beginning July 1, 2015, as to what happens with History and Science Museums as they move into the future. We do not create new concepts here, but we are precise about how those concepts should apply. For example, there is already a statute that says parking lots for nonprofits can be exempt if they're made available to the public 355 days a year for free. But we need to clarify that that will actually apply for museums for a variety of legal reasons, because there have been arguments saying it doesn't really apply to a museum. Yes, the parking lot is available to the public 365 days a year for free, but it doesn't quite qualify under the general statute, at least according to one county. Gift shops. We've had to litigate whether or not the museum gift shop is taxable. There's no other museum gift shop in the state that's been up for property taxes, but ours has. And there may be good arguments made about it. Well, in the past, certain things were sold. We've had to go through litigation about that. But I'll use another example, the theater. I will tell you for the record that we've just settled on the fourth year of litigation about what percentage of movies are shown in the theater that are considered educational versus non-educational. And we had to go through the whole log of films shown during the most recent year, and 8% of those films we think really weren't educational. So we'll give you a 92% exemption on the theater. This is the kind of detail that we're working our way through. This bill says, wait a minute, if it's generally being used for educational films, we're not going to argue about the fact that literally the Polar Express was shown once during a given year during the holiday season and say that suddenly makes part of this theater taxable. If the vast majority of the films being shown are part of the museum mission and they're being shown to educate people who are going to the museum, that should be enough. And frankly, that is the standard that is generally followed everywhere. But if there's any question about the details here, I'm happy to answer such question. But I want to emphasize, too, we've worked with the Department of Revenue, who are, as I understand it, neutral on this bill, so we could come up with language that would work across the board. The one suggestion they have made, which we respectfully disagree with, that this be limited to aerospace museums in terms of the language of this bill. We think the solution should remain in place for history and science museums. We are not the only aerospace museum in the state, but there's only a handful of them. But every museum in the state, whether it's a maritime museum or a transportation museum or a local history museum, should be able to take advantage of this legislation and say, yeah, we have a gift shop for our patrons. Oh, we have a coffee shop. Yes, we have a parking lot. These are all part of what we're doing to be open to the public as a museum. The last thing I'd like to talk about, because I think it shows the kind of sensitivity we've had to deal with, we have some open space on the museum campus. God forbid that we would have some open space because we're not displaying an aircraft on every square inch of the facade around the buildings. That should be taxed because it's open space. Well, I would argue, well, maybe we're going to put an aircraft there at some point, maybe not. But generally, we put a standard in here to say if there's some open space adjacent to your buildings, that's okay. In fact, in Oregon, our land use laws have always encouraged open space, especially when you have a museum that is just inside the city limits and you're transitioning into a rural area. These are the kinds of things that you should not have to hire lawyers and go to the tax court magistrate division or the tax court about. We should have a statute in place where any person of common sense can say, okay, thank you for the mission you're fulfilling for the community, and let's move on to a case where somebody really needs to be taxed as to property taxes. We encourage passage of the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Wood. Do you want to add on to that? Or?
No, sir. I think he said it very well.
Okay. I assume that a lot of us up here are more familiar with one of the most popular spots in the metro area, which is OMSI. And can you replace OMSI for the Evergreen Air Museum at the same time when you're making the case that you just made for this?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. OMSI is a great example because it's an urban location museum. They currently, under the current statute, the Multnomah County Assessor has granted them an exemption, as should be granted, and they're operating under that language. Should new Multnomah County commissioners come in, should a new assessor come in, they may be subjected to the kind of arguments that the Evergreen Aviation and Space Museum has been subjected to. Well, let's take an analysis of that museum store, and let's debate whether or not you're selling everything that we approve of. Or let's take a look at your coffee shop and see whether or not we think you're operating it just for the benefit of your patrons and visitors. or whether it's competing. Now, that's not an issue we bring up in the bill, but you hear about that. And with Evergreen, I could tell you the nearest restaurant is a mile and a quarter away, but apparently there's an issue about us competing with food establishments when patrons come to the campus. For OMSI, I think the most important part is what they make use of the space around them, that they're given an opportunity to have some open space in that urban setting. And under the current statute, they're doing fine. This supplemental statute actually gives them extra backing to protect their exemption status.
Thank you. Questions? Senator Boquist?
Just expanding slightly here, I mean, one of the issues that the committee deals with, at least for the last decade, those of us have been around in the revenue and finance business, is as you pointed out, creep. And that is the case of, you know, we had gain share in SIP, and we didn't think it was going to get big, as we had a fairly substantial, robust discussion a decade later, again, since the last major discussion that I was involved in and had to fix this. And likewise, in central assessment, we had a $9 million problem in 2005, and we didn't think it was going to grow, and it wasn't going to do this, and it turned into a $275 million program. It appears to me, and of course, what the goal here, this was heard at first as an amendment to another bill, but the goal is to try and figure out to clarify a statewide standard and simplify a statewide standard. But having said that, in your experience and research and everything else like that, we've had a considerable amount of debate. Do you have experience, for example, in other portions of the nonprofit code? I think we've heard all kinds. The whole nonprofit tax code is problematic and needs overhaul. Is there something in your experience that indicates that, despite us hearing it, that that's correct and that we really need to take an overall approach in the future on this issue? Because it's not that it's bad, it's just that it has a lot of ambiguity.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Boquist, there is a need for the reform that you discussed. The evolution of nonprofits in our society has been substantial in the last 10 to 20 years, and that's a good thing in terms of community service. On the other hand, there can also be organizations which are created which are really trying to abuse the system and get around the nonprofit status for their own purposes. In other words, create a nonprofit that's not really a nonprofit. The Department of Justice has been pretty good about getting more and more aggressive about looking at those organizations and seeing whether or not they're fulfilling a public purpose. I am not a tax lawyer generally, but I am involved in tax policy, and I'm proudly the author of the legislation which created the Tax Court Magistrate Division, which cleaned up the adjudication process for taxes, both at the state and county level. So I do believe in reform. In this instance, I think it's going to take some time to massage exemption laws as to nonprofits, because you at the same time should be looking at the qualification laws for nonprofits. And I'd encourage the committee and the legislature to fix the problem we've presented to you as to history and science museums, knowing we can do that today. But at the same time, there should be an effort to revisit how we qualify nonprofits as such. And it's not just the property tax we talk about there, it's the income tax, and also how we qualify them in terms of the property tax. That would take a task force and some time, and it's a good project to take on because of mission creep for nonprofits in Oregon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bartschinger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mannix, just one question is, what did the museum do to set off the assessor? Or do you know?
Well,
that's a good question.
I'm going to, Mr. Chairman, Senator Bartschinger, I'm going to be very careful about how I answer this question.
I know.
There have been some dramatic changes in recent years, and I will say this for the record. The original founder of Evergreen Aviation and Space Museum was Del Smith, who was quite the entrepreneur and in many ways was very successful, and in many other ways ticked off members of the community. And this museum is no longer, you know, connected with Mr. Smith in any way other than the vision of the founder, who put hundreds of millions of dollars into creating this museum. The museum itself is now its own independent operating nonprofit entity, operating in the black, by the way. There are other issues out there about two of the buildings that were owned by one of those for-profits that went bankrupt, and that's being resolved this month favorably. But back to whatever happened, I don't know. But I do know that in terms of the law, there should have been no change in the property tax status. There was a change, and we've had to fight back through litigation. And that has identified a problem which can apply to any one of the 240 museums in the state. And a lot of them cannot afford to hire an attorney to go to bat to fight back. And we're trying to prevent this problem from spreading. This could be the beginning of an epidemic if we don't nip this in the bud.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I agree that the nonprofit status and the laws around that are need fixing, and that we probably need to look at it over a little bit longer time and figure out, you know, what we really think about where nonprofits are and how they should be taxed and how they should be defined. And so I that's where I want to go with this personally.
Sounds like he wants to chair the committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Mannix.
May I respond to that?
Sure.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Riley. I do want to mention something that was brought to me once when I was a state representative and I was trying to reform something about the payment of child support and workers' compensation. And the chair of the committee, and I was in my first or second session, the chair of the committee came over to me after we'd had a hearing, and all kinds of people were attacking this comprehensive bill for let's get this child support taken care of. And the chair of the committee came over and said, well, Kevin, sometimes you eat the sandwich one bite at a time. And so we narrowed the bill down and took care of part of the problem. Then we came back the next session and took care of more of the problem. Then we came back the third session and took care of the rest of the problem, so that after 6 years, anyone receiving workers' compensation benefits was also required to pay their child support. It was an incremental reform. I think today I would beg Senator Riley and the committee to give us a piece of reform today while we work on the big picture.
Bite at sandwich. Okay. When you started out, Mr. Mannix, you said loosey-goosey, not sprucey-goosey, right?
Quite so, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you both. So let's turn to the counties in Yamhill County. Gilbert L., Jeff Ivey, and Wendy Johnson.
Chair, members of the committee, thank you for hearing us. For the record, Gil Riddell, Association of Oregon Counties. I'm accompanied by Jeff Ivey, who is Assessment Taxation Office of Yamhill County. I have several things to say. I'll say them quickly. They're on your record in OLS, and I'll refer to a couple of those to clarify what's on and why they're on. You've seen this concept three times before. Each time it has attempted on behalf of a particular property to amend a statute that related to charitable property tax exemptions that is, and I won't beat a dead horse, but I will say this, archaic, patchwork of different topics, often amended, inconsistently interpreted by the courts, and thus inconsistently applied by county assessors. It is ripe for legislation. This bill would amend the statute in its current flawed form by broadening the exemption to fit a fact situation of a particular property with even more vague language that will apply statewide and likely lead to more litigation. This is not the piece of the sandwich you want to eat. AOC urges the committee to defeat this bill and call an interim study of this statute, ORS 307-130, and charitable exemptions generally. We would like to see the outcome of the study to apply statutes that address the separate categories of charitable property tax exemptions separately. Yesterday you heard Tom Lynn Harris, who was representing the assessors in the context of House Bill 2690, laud that bill because it's about charitable low-income housing for these very features. It's separate from 307-130, and I worked on that bill too, and that was our first request and purpose with that group. Clarify the language, have clarity of the language, and the ability to apply consistently the policy statewide. This bill, instead of improving current law, muddles it badly by taking a particular fact situation of a particular party so as to overturn adverse tax court rulings, and asks that you make this public policy apply statewide. Legislation that is property specific very rarely makes good statewide public policy. We do not know the fiscal and revenue impacts of this bill statewide. There are, at last count, 246 museums in Oregon. And the legislature at this point has neither the time nor the resources to learn the impacts. I will note on your committee records on OLIS a letter from the Dalles agreeing with AOC and commenting on the several museums in the city, a note from the city of Oregon City expressing concerns. I also would like to note that the High Desert Museum and OMSI are fully exempt, and that the Department of Revenue and its letter from John Phillips to you describes OMSI and High Desert Museum as simply not the same type of facilities and are not comparable to Evergreen. John can speak for himself and clarify that if need be. As to the bill, if you go to page 2 of the bill, starting at line 26, we have some examples of how this does not help our current flawed situation. To qualify for a property tax exemption, at least 75% of entertainment features shown at Evergreen's Stadium Seating Theater must be museum-related, and at least 75% of its retail store inventory must be museum-related. The theater setup with its stadium seating is designed for and is rented out to for-profit corporate events and shows commercial feature films. The county will not have the resources to police the arbitrary 75% standard, and on what basis will it try? Revenue collected, number of showings, attendance totals? The same is true for the retail store. If a county were able, does it periodically count individual items for sale, weigh the relative revenue made, or make judgment calls about museum, what is museum related? The standard is a litigator's dream. It's also arbitrary. If one needs to use a number based on real experience, you will find in the record a letter from OMSI to the county of Multnomah successfully asserting that its gift shop should be exempt. You notice on page 2, paragraph 2, and its footnote that OMSI writes, the store sells only merchandise related to science and technology with minor exceptions. Footnote states, the store sells a small volume of candy, jewelry, and other items not related to science or technology, accounting for approximately 8% of the store's gross volume. If you must use a number as a standard, we would ask you to use 90%. Which is based on a real fact situation rather than an arbitrary 75%. second point, the parking lot area devoted to the museum, we believe must be clearly demarcated from parking lots used for for-profit enterprises, and we understand that that is in fact the case at this campus. If there isn't a demarcation, then we'll have a dispute and it likely will be litigated. So this particular language of this bill does not reduce the potential for litigation. In fact, in our view, increases it. Is the food service facility of the appropriate size for the attendance at the museum? Is it also used by for-profit corporate events? If so, how often? Assessor has to keep track of that. The property contains former corporate offices and other related areas. When these areas are vacant but claimed as museum-related, meeting areas, classrooms, display rooms, or storage areas, simply because they're there, there will be disputes. And finally, the unimproved land contiguous to the museum in this particular fact situation is over 200 acres. This provision of the bill is a head-scratcher. It's a completely new idea. Is it exempt simply because it's there? I haven't heard of any purpose it serves beyond being there. Remember that if this is to become law, it applies to all other property of this category statewide, and we have no idea of the revenue impact. And remember, 45% of the property tax collections go to schools. Jeff Ivey of Yamhill County will explain the current property tax exemption as applied to this property going forward, which makes much of this bill unnecessary. Given that, why not defeat the bill and, until the interim, leave 307-130 as muddled as it is alone? Do not make the statute worse by adding more confusing, unclear language, and unknown fiscal and revenue consequences. AOC urges that you instead call for a fresh cleanup in the interim of the often litigated charitable property tax exemption laws. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ivey.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Jeff Ivey, and I am currently the Deputy Assessor of Yamhill County. Just want to give you a little background on the campus as a whole. There's the litigation that we've been going through with the corporation, the Michael King Smith Foundation, has been primarily focused right now on two large parcels of land that contain two museums and a theater / office building. One of the parcels is a 60-acre parcel, and it can holds the Space Museum, which is about 150,000 square foot building. As it stands going forward, 100% of that Space Museum is exempt. It all qualifies for property tax exemption. It's a museum, meeting all the use standards that would be applicable in the statutes. About 20 acres of the land is currently exempt, and that would include areas such as parking lots, outside display areas around the building that have airplanes and other space-related items already parked on them. About 35 acres is currently in farm special assessment. It's being farmed. So that is already taken into account. It's not exempt, but it's assessed at a much lower farm assessed value already. And then there's about a 5.5-acre berm, which is a 15 or so foot dirt pile of about wraps around the side of the building that, from our understanding, is basically the remnants of the foundation excavation for all the buildings out on the property. There's no use going on that part of the property that would qualify for exemption. Therefore, we do not feel that it is exempt. With respect to the other tax lot that holds the Air Museum and the theater / office complex, currently just over 95% of the actual Air Museum is exempt. There's only two areas in the Air Museum that we have agreed with Mr. Mannix on in a recent stipulation that remain taxable: the gift shop and a wine bar. The gift shop is approximately 5,000 square feet, and the wine bar is approximately 720 square feet. That was an agreement that we've come to recently on that. There's also, in a similar situation, a large parking lot that is 100% exempt. There's area around the outside of the building already that contains, again, aircraft and other items. There's a tank display area that has some military tanks sitting up on a hill. That's all exempt. There's a small area of oak grove off to the side that's not being used for anything. It's not exempt. Does not meet any use qualifications as required in the statutes. And there's about 5.5 acres also on this property that's under farm special assessment because it's being farmed appropriately. The theater building is kind of where I believe a lot of the issues have arisen from. There are three, on one side of the building, there are three levels of office space. And on the other side is the theater itself with some museum offices that support that, as well as the projector room and that sort of thing. Almost 70% of that building is exempt, meets exempt requirements. There's a curator storage area on the second floor, which is being used right now. But the areas that aren't exempt is a third floor, 9,000 square foot area that is used for rental Yes, they do have some meetings from the museum board of directors, but they've recently, we were told, have rented it out to Nike for weddings. There was a dental convention that went on there. So it's not just being exclusively used for any sort of exempt purposes. Also, there's a 6,300 square foot or so area on the first floor that is being used by Jet Midwest, a company that bought some of the assets from some of the former Evergreen entities, and they're currently using it and storing equipment there. That doesn't qualify for property tax exemption. There's also area in the basement, over 1,700 square feet, similar that Jet Midwest is using and is not currently used for property tax exempt purposes. So that's kind of a rundown of that, of the whole exempt process. A couple of things I would like to point out, though, that Mr. Mannix said, this property has not been 100% exempt at any time in the past. I just looked up on our county records, and it has been taxed all the way back to 1997. What I believe maybe he is referencing is that they reapplied in 2008 or 9 for a property tax exemption because their lease expired, and they're required to do so. When the application came in, we went through the vetting process just like we would do with anybody else. Yes, there was a new assessor at that time, but his process of doing that may have changed from the previous administration. I don't know. I wasn't in the office at that time. But there, it wasn't something that the assessor went out and did on his own. The applicant came in and did an application to have the percentage of exemption looked at. I'm assuming they were applying for more area in one of the buildings because they had just recently built the Space Museum out there. I would like to make a comment about the OMSI, if I may, as well. This campus is not even close to OMSI as far as size goes. OMSI doesn't have 90 acres on the two parcels immediately surrounding the museums. I don't know how big OMSI is acreage-wise, but it's not 90 acres. It doesn't have farm specially assessed land around the outside of it. It's not contiguous to 200 other acres of property owned by various Evergreen entities that, if this bill were to come to pass, potentially could be exempt just because it's contiguous with the building, the property of the buildings that it's located on. So there is a little bit of a, muddlement, in my opinion, of what could happen, because the language says contiguous to. Well, if those parcels are contiguous to and in the same ownership, they may automatically qualify for property tax exemption.
Chair Haas, members of the committee, my name is Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I think a lot of the issues have been raised, but I think I'm going to delve a little more into the details of this bill. There, in OLIS, you have the list of 246 museums that was provided with 865. I'm not sure if it's online for this bill as well, but with Senate Bill 865, there was a list of 246 museums. We looked at those, and it's 138 of our cities that have a science or history museum located in that city. This bill does not just affect Evergreen in McMinnville. If it did, I don't think we'd be objecting to the bill. But as it's written, it would apply to every history and science museum in a way that we don't think is appropriate. History and science museums, if they're acting in a charitable manner, are exempt from property taxes, both for their real property and the personal property. But the way this bill is written, we would now look at the charitable organizations, take out history and science, and then do some specific rules for those museums. And it's that language that we object to. We agree with the prior witnesses that the statute for charitable institutions is really a mess, and it has been for a long time and needs work, but this is not the right answer. And we would respectfully ask that you, if you're going to address the Evergreen issue, that you keep it very narrow to Evergreen. Looking at the bill on page 2, there's a list of things that would be included to be exempt, and then there's a provision that would say what's not included. I actually think those kind of conflict with each other. The list of what's included that we object to would be on line 31 of page 2, the food service portion, specifically saying it doesn't matter who does your food service or how you get the money or how you spend the money. If it's done by the History Museum, it's always going to be exempt. We would object to that. That's leaving present practice of it has to be for the nonprofit, it has to be done by the nonprofit. This is just saying it's a food service facility, it's going to be exempt. if it's on the museum grounds. The second one we object to is on line 33, where it says that the retail store, if at least 75% is museum-related, the whole thing is exempt. Again, we would object to that. That's going to set a new precedent that it had to be a charitable before, and now if it's 75% charitable, the whole thing will be considered charitable. We don't like that new line. On line 38, it provides that if there's a theater in the museum, that if 75% of use is used for educational, then the whole thing would be exempt. Again, it's changing our present rule, and we don't see that that's a good practice. On line 40, the open space provision, again, I think it's important to clarify this issue, but to set a new rule that always open space with a museum will be considered exempt is a problem for us. And then line 42, the displays, educational classrooms, or meeting areas, just carte blanche saying those are always exempt is a problem because, again, they could be used for non-charitable purposes. And then what it does not include, what's not exempted, is listed on lines 43 and 44. We don't have a problem with specifically saying, okay, a hotel, a water park is not going to be exempt, but why the chapel? Normally, the chapels would be in our other provision, the religious institutions are exempt. But then it has this or for any commercial enterprise. So that seems, and that's with this subsection. So it seems that I'm not sure how that commercial enterprise would go with that whole list of what it does include. Anyway, so do we have to look at that each time on the food and refreshments, the retail store? If those are commercial enterprises, and so what did that whole list get you? I don't see that these really work well together. There's the parking lot provision that's carried over from existing law. That's fine. But the short of it is almost every type of museum has food, gift shops, theaters, parking lots. So why are we pulling out just history and science in this bill? We need to fix the whole thing and have consistent rules. If we do this piece this time, then we've sort of set the stage for how we're going to handle the rest of our charities and the rest of our museums. It sets a bad precedent, and we'll, even if we're going to work on this in the interim, these museums will now be under different rules, and then we'll change the rules again, and I just think that's a bad precedent. We need to get it right, and if the problem is the Evergreen situation, we'd prefer that you narrow it. It's unique in that it has the aviation and science and history. We can make this narrower, and that's what we would respectfully request. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
We all see the problem here and one of the glaring problems that troubles me is this inconsistency in interpretation from one assessor to another. I don't think it's unfair to compare OMSI and Evergreen. One example would be the movies. Mm-hmm. I just looked at the OMSI IMAX theater, and most of them are science movies. But you know what else is playing there right now? Cinderella. As popular as Cinderella is, it's never going to be confused for a science movie. And so would the Multnomah County assessor now have the discretion to say, aha, I saw something there, let's change their property tax arrangement. And if he decides not to, the guy in Yamhill County decides, well, I'm going to do it. I mean, that's a huge problem. And, you know, personally, when it comes to those things, whether it's the restaurants or the movies, if the money they make from Cinderella admission tickets helps subsidize the whole operation so they can keep prices low, and that is by far the biggest issue at OMSI, I guess I'm okay with that. And so I'm really kind of, you know, troubled by this inconsistency in interpretation by the assessors. As much as I love them, they shouldn't have that much discretion, but apparently these statutes allow them that discretion. And that's what I think is one of the things we need to look at really hard to take out that much discretion for the assessors.
Mr. Chair, may I respond to that comment? It's not only the assessors; it's magistrates, the tax court. There's inconsistent rulings all the way up the chain of appeals. So that has an effect as well.
Senator Buckley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I suppose set the stage here to make sure. This, all three of you are correct that this started as a very specific property issue, and I, as the senator, inherited it from the state representative, several people. As you mentioned, this was an amendment in another bill, and then I specifically, because I get to fill out a economic financial report that says what I do in all 36 counties, because as an elected state senator, you get to deal with 36 counties. And so I then very specifically had the discussion with LRO staff and with the Department of Revenue and said, okay, what's a simplified statewide Band-Aid to a sucking chest wound that we can do right now and simplify it, try and be fair, not impact your law case, and so on and so forth, and try and come up with a solution. So I do take personal reference from some of you, because DOR was asked to help try and craft simplified stuff, and LRO can do a fiscal, and so we do know what the impact, and I'm frankly tired of shots at DOR, which I don't normally support, as they know, or shots at legislative revenue staff. But this problem is very similar to some that both of the cities and counties are familiar with. We've had the gain share issue. We've had the central assessment issue. I am not a freshman in the House. I've been here a decade. I've seen how all these things mushrooms. And with greatest intention, Yamhill County looks at the statutes, tries to apply it. This happens to be a statute situation in which, instead of doing it 36 countywide and 100 and some odd cities wide, one thing that fits, as was pointed out, this is sort of all over. I mean, you're stuck at Yamhill County trying to make an interpretation, change of administration, change of applications. You're trying to figure it out because there's no statewide policy. But the fact of the matter, I've been here a decade, and this has been a problem for a decade, and no disrespect to the city association or the county association, I haven't seen any major massive work group of saying, let's overhaul it. I have personally voted for city bills to make exemptions to this and that and so on and so forth, and for county things to make exemptions, so on and so forth. So I'm all in for trying to figure out a comprehensive solution. My concern is to stop whatever it is we're doing until we get that solution. That's the point that we're even sitting here for today, is trying to figure out what is, let's stop, let's not let them go to OMSI, let's figure out what the solution is. And unfortunately, we're in a situation where we don't really have that. You can't control at Yamhill, unless you somehow work for everybody, what the county assessor, who's not elected, my understanding, and somebody not here, the assessor in Multnomah County is not elected or appointed, versus the poor guy that's over in Deschutes County who is elected, who's under pressure to figure out how to pay for all those senior services, and so he's going out and saying, hey, they did this, so on and so forth. So that's sort of the direction we're trying to figure out. Okay, stop it right now. But cities and counties, we all, I don't think, Wendy, you're new, but Gil, you've been around as long as I have. This is not a new problem. The question is, and we just haven't focused on it. And so kicking the can down the road for two more years while we figure out an overall solution until we at least put a moratorium or whatever it is we're talking about on hold, simply to me doesn't make sense, because we did this with central assessment and it went from 9 million to 200 and some odd million, and I got this tar baby a decade later to try and work with the chair to figure out. So if you care to respond, I mean, I understand your concerns, but then, and I will just add one oddity here. It's the Department of Revenue. It's unfortunate for the assessors, because if this was $1 million or $2 million property in the business side, it would fall under industrial properties, and the expertise would be centralized at the Department of Revenue back there, and they'd be working with you, so there was one, at least one sort of stuff. But they don't help you on this. You're kind of on your own. I get that, because of the way we, the legislature, decades ago wrote the law. But the problem of the statewide, I mean, what prevents us from expanding this out of control before we come back and fix it? That's the problem I have.
Mr. Chair, may I respond?
Yes, I'm sorry.
Senator Boquist, Mr. Vice Chair, I think that this bill, this fourth version of this concept sort of smacked us in the face, and the assessors have been saying it very clearly this session, that this is enough of the patchwork, that now's the time to stop, that this is the last, basically the last straw. And so we agree with you to the point where you say, let's not do anymore. We agree with you about that. I know that your intention is make this maybe the last one. We disagree at that point. Why have we not trumpeted this problem? Well, we're general governments, and I can give you a long list of what we have to deal with, and it would be all old hat to you. But this particular bill now is a cold slap in the face for us to say this can't go on, and the inconsistency is not fair to the taxpayer. It's not fair to other taxpayers who have to watch their services dwindle because of new property tax expenditures. So we're asking that you stop right now and help us open up the statute, separate it, take the threads out, and make it clear with respect to each category.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Boquist.
The only problem I have with that, Mr. Riddell, is that I've heard it a dozen times before on other issues, and then we've never gotten there. That's the only problem I have with it, is it's like, okay, how do we ensure that we just kind of stop when you have 36 different assessments that you can do it? And just for the record, I believe, Yamhill County, you did mention that this really, we're pretty settled on what you're going to be, so this really isn't going to change much. Because that was the intent. That's what we asked, not to change the work that you've done so far. It just basically puts everything on a – it levels your field where you can do what you're doing now, and we stop it sort of and say, okay, now let's stop this one. Because there's no guarantee in these sessions that we're going to get to a fix in 2 years. I mean, heck, I've been at rural medical, and I've got that one being fixed now, and this will be the 12th year or 11th year I worked on that one, and it's still not fixed. And so and once again, and I worked heavily on that one, I'm just throwing up my hands in the air, just about – 663 tobacco. I'm about to throw my hands up in the air on too. So,
Mr. Chair, we're AOC. I'll be sure that AOC is aware of this and has its full attention, and we would be more than delighted to help as much as possible, and so would the assessors.
I'm happy with it. I mean, this is a two-sided conversation.
Yeah. Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, just to respond as well. I think that. For me, and you're right, I'm new, the charitable issue came to the forefront pretty early in the session in my mind because of the hospital and clinic issue. That is way too much money that is being litigated and disputed each year, that we've got to fix that. And all of those provisions are in the same one. I mean, just so the record's really clear, we're talking about ORS 307.130. It's in the bill. It's on page 1. It's lines 2 through 23. That provision is odd. It says that you're exempt if you're an art museum, a volunteer fire department, an incorporated literary, benevolent, charitable, and scientific institution. That's all we've got. And then we have definitions at the beginning there that apply only to art museum. So basically, if you're a charitable institution, you get exempt property. But then the caveat is it has to be in lines 21 through 23, it has to be exclusively occupied or in use for those listed reasons. And that's the part that's tricky, is exclusively. So when we're dealing with the theater, it's 75% of the time it's used for something else, so it's not exclusively. So we divide it out. And that's what it's hard to apply this exclusive requirement.
Existing law. Yeah. You're talking about existing law.
Existing law, right. Yeah. So that's
I'm with you. Existing law is screwed
right,
up.
Right. It's just really complicated. But it's
the problem.
It has been a bright line that it has to be exclusive. If it's not exclusive, you don't get the exemption for that portion, because the lead into that on line 21 is only such real or personal property or proportion thereof. So that's been the rule. We don't have a de minimis exception or anything in existing law, and that's part of the problem, arguably. But that's the setup. You have to be one of the types. You have to file your claim with the county that you want the exemption, and then you get an all or proportion if it's one of the listed. It applies to a lot of areas, and we'd like this fixed, but
The existing law fix,
but we just don't think this is the way to fix it, because you're drawing new bright lines that are inconsistent with existing practice and will drive the market in a way and drive museum practice in a way that we don't think is right, when the line has been commercial or nonprofit. Only if you're nonprofit do you get the exemption.
Right, the 36 different lines.
Right, and I agree that we've got some inconsistency problems. I just don't think this is the solution. But we commit to working on it in the interim, at least from the LLC perspective. It has to be done, because it's too important.
Okay. On that note, I think we'll finish. Thank you.
Thank you.
Panel. And close the public hearing on Senate Bill 967. More to come on this issue. And that clears us out for the day. Thank you. We're going to be back at it on Monday. We have an agenda. We have a lot of House bills that have come over that we need to take up. So, thank you. We are adjourned.
I will.
We are adjourned.